Frequency Podcast Network. Stories that matter, podcasts that resonate.
Forecasting what's next. Good luck in this economy. With the daily deluge of policy and trade and tariff headlines coming from U.S. President Donald Trump, it has been next to impossible to gauge how businesses and consumers are handling the uncertainty. Any projections made at the start of the year have been pretty much thrown to the wind, made even more difficult by the mercurial nature of the American president, who threatened import tariffs to start February. Then they were put on pause for a month, back on for a day to start this month, and now back on pause for at least some items imported from Canada and Mexico into the United States. At least that's until reciprocal tariffs are set to go into effect on April 2nd. Now, there have been a few signs that businesses were preparing for all of this disruption. Late last year, stocking up on inventory, Canadian exports hit some record levels in January. But the pace of hiring last month showed signs of slowing down. So, what is the best guess about what's going on now and what to expect going forward? My name is Mike Eppel. And joining us on the line is Avery Shenfeld, chief economist at the CIBC. Avery, how are you doing under these daily announcements coming from the White House?
Well, doing about as well as can be expected for an economist who can't really have a forecast, or at least has to almost change the forecast day by day, week by week. Until this trade news settles down, it's going to be very challenging to have a firm view on where things are actually headed.
Is there not a sense, though, that overall tariffs are bad for an economy, are bad for consumers? And from that, there's kind of been an extrapolation about exactly how this is going to play out. But like you say, when one minute the tariffs are on and then they're on pause and only for certain parts of the economy, then it's kind of difficult to actually calculate.
The real missing piece of information is how high the tariffs are going to be and, importantly, how long they're going to last. So, is this going to be something we can negotiate a way out of in a few quarters, as we did for the steel and aluminum tariffs when Trump was first president, although it took a year there? Or is this permanent? And the longer it lasts, the more damage it creates. But we're still living in a pretty gray area here in terms of what the ultimate objectives are for the U.S. administration. Is this the art of the deal, or is this a permanent trade war?
Well, let's talk about some of the economic statistics that we got in on Friday, and that was the jobs report for February. And at the start of February, you know, everybody was braced for tariffs to take effect. We saw, you know, the market crater early, and then the dollar hit a 22-year low, and then everything kind of stabilized when Trump put things on pause for 30 days. So was the February payrolls number, 1,100 jobs added, which was a flat line, all things considered. Was that a true indication of what's going on in the economy right now, and businesses? Are they showing the uncertainty and the caution?
I think it's too early to expect the storms on the trade front to be showing up in these data. Perhaps more the winter storms that we had in the month had more of an impact. And as well, we've had such strong employment gains in the prior 2 months that the three-month average is still 56,000 new jobs per month. So it's too early to call this a trend. In fact, you could argue that economic activity in the first couple of months of 2025 was actually accelerated by the threat of tariffs, because what we've seen is that there was a huge rush by exporters to get goods produced out the door and across the border before the tariffs went into effect.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit more about that, because that trade number for January, we had a trade surplus with something like $14 billion, which was off the chart. I found it interesting that companies can actually accelerate things that quickly. They kind of saw what was coming, but the fact that the number was as big as it was, that was kind of surprising.
I think they started to plan for this the day Donald Trump got elected. And we saw this not just from Canadian exporters, but Chinese exporters. And it's both sides. It's American companies ordering extra inventories, knowing that these tariffs might be in the cards. And also perhaps even some Canadian companies deciding to ship goods to a warehouse and then sell it out of that U.S. warehouse. So we saw a big rush. We saw freight rates actually climb because everyone was trying to bid for the same trucks. in the late days of March and even into the early days, sorry, late days of February and even into the early days of March.
The U.S. president said this week that, you know, and not even in jest, that there would be a little disturbance in the economy for consumers and farmers. But I think that a lot of people, if you base what the market did with the worst week for Wall Street in quite some time, business thinks that this is going to be a lot more painful than what the White House is maybe letting on or even realizes how this is going to go. You know, I guess the question is, how long would it actually take for an economy to adjust if these tariffs were put in place and stayed there and businesses would actually have to adjust where their money is, where they're investing and where their people are actually working?
I think those disruptions are actually Canada's best hope for trying to get the U.S. administration to stand down on some of the trade war. So you saw this week, for example, that when the tariffs do come back on potash, they're going to be 10% rather than 25%. That's the White House hearing from the farm community saying, well, there isn't enough U.S. domestic potash production. You can't move a potash mine from Saskatchewan magically across the border the way you can a car manufacturing plant, for example. And so they're starting to realize that this disruption may be longer and bigger than what they had anticipated. And we're really hoping that there are more of these disruptive effects that come to the attention of the White House, because that, rather than our retaliation, is really our best weapon for making a change. Even in the auto sector, I think the big three car companies have made it pretty clear that while they can make some adjustments in their sourcing of supplies and so on, that it takes years to retool plants, relocate. And so it's not a matter of, you know, give us a month leeway, for example, as the president has done, and we'll be fully ready for to make every car in the U.S. with no Canadian and Mexican content. It's very unrealistic.
Well, it's not just the assembly lines that, you know, you would potentially move from Oshawa or Oakville into the United States. It's the interlinked parts supply, which isn't just Canada and Mexico. It's global in some cases, depending on the electronics, for example. So it's an unrealistic target. And like you say, the commentary from the president and White House spokesperson Carolyn Leavitt was, well, in a month we want to see changes and where the manufacturing is going to be taking place. You know, the auto industry must be looking at this going, that's not going to happen. That's going to, even if it were, would take a much longer than 6 months or even a year.
That's what, you know, both the economics community, the business community is concerned about. And that gives us, again, some hope that these 1 month delays, which are really trivial in the scheme of an economic outlook, will turn into more meaningful relief if we can get the right negotiating framework in place. So to get beyond the shouting matches and the retaliation and sitting down at a table in a more orderly fashion to try to hammer out, you know, the extension of the Canada-US-Mexico deal, for example, and some reasonable compromises on the trade front to address whatever concerns the U.S. has in an orderly way.
What are we thinking about what's going to happen for inflation, price pressures for consumers? I mean, we've gone through ostensibly 3 years of prices going up and up and up. And, you know, the theory being that tariffs only raise prices and leading to supply disruptions. How quickly do you figure that's going to start to show up for consumers?
Well, it will take a while, and I think it's more of a risk on the U.S. side of the border than Canada, because if the trade war lingers, it's going to be more damaging to the Canadian economy than the U.S. economy. We'll end up with a larger climb in unemployment, and that ultimately provides a cushion against inflation. If people lose their jobs and don't have spending power, then whatever immediate effect you get on goods prices, for example, could over time be offset. It takes a while, but could be offset by, for example, a softening in rent inflation and other things that reflect domestic spending power. The U.S. is closer to full employment and is more at risk of seeing a tariff-based increase in prices translate into a broader and maybe more sustained increase in inflation in the U.S. economy. And that's why I think what we're going to see is the Bank of Canada cutting interest rates in March, while the Federal Reserve is on hold because they are somewhat concerned that inflation could escalate from where it is because of a trade war.
Delve a little bit into that, the talk about next week's Wednesday's decision on policy for the central bank. I mean, it's going to be a real balancing act because before the tariffs were on, there wasn't much discussion about our central bank needing to cut interest rates. But do they cut now and worry about inflationary pressures later? Is that kind of the theory?
I think that the reality is that their job is always to look ahead a year, year and a half, and think about where monetary policy has to be. And because the inflation threat is really a one-time lift to prices that is then likely to peter out if the economy is soft, they really do need to focus on the economic risks and doing what they can to help out. So the governor has a point when he says that the one tool they have at their disposal, which is interest rates, is not going to be a cure-all for any long-term structural hits to the Canadian economy. They can't bring back a factory that's closed because they lower interest rates by a 0.5% or even 1%. But what they can do is try to create some extra momentum in the domestic side of the economy. And the governor has talked about helping to smooth the adjustment process. So to me, that's code word for using their tool, which is an interest rate cut that they might otherwise not have done in order to help out. So we do expect them to cut interest rates in March. And if this isn't all resolved between now and the summer, and it likely won't be, we probably have another couple of quarter point cuts in the cards to just really provide a little bit of help while we wait for some of these uncertainties to clear up. And maybe if we want to be optimistic for Canada to hammer out a deal sometime in the summer or maybe even in the fall to end this trade war or at least end a lot of it.
Do you expect provincial and or the federal government to do anything from a stimulus standpoint or a support level? I mean, there had been some signals that, you know, we certainly saw it during COVID and business shutdown that Doug Ford's talked about this, you know, not giving any specifics per se, but if they delve into the coffers and go deeper into debt, I suppose, to what extent, and would that in and of itself get back to the inflationary pressures that were built the first time around when we saw a lot of government spending?
I do expect to see some role for fiscal policy. And in fact, if you didn't think that was coming and you thought the trade war was going to be permanent, you know, we'd be taking interest rates down to near zero again. But we're not really expecting either of those things. We have hopes for a negotiated deal at some point, and we do expect fiscal policy, which is a more targeted approach, to start to kick in. The one problem right now is that while there are a few things that the federal government can do without calling Parliament back, it can't really pull out the big guns. And so, you know, really looking at a post-election decision coming in May, for example, to provide some sort of support for either workers or challenge businesses as part of a fiscal response. We have seen some provinces announce things in early budgets, and I do expect the Ontario government to do something in that regard. But again, it'll be a while before that flows into the economy in a meaningful way, which is a good reason for the Bank of Canada to at least help out with a March rate cut. And then it can wait and see how much fiscal support is given and whether they don't need to cut interest rates as much.
Avery, I would say rest up over the weekend, but we never know when we'll get an announcement over Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah, we'll be here watching.
Thank you very much for joining us today.
Take care.
And that was Avery Shenfeld, the chief economist at the Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce. My name is Mike Eppel. Thank you very much for listening to In This Economy. If you have any feedback, questions, or for a story idea, you can email me at mike.eppel, that's E-P-P-E-L, at rci.rogers.com. And a reminder, you can get all of your favorite Frequency Network podcasts on the Seeker app. That's S-E-E-K. KR.